We have time for questions, and so I would ask whoever has the microphone to see if somebody has a question for any of the panelists.
I was hoping you could expand on your daughter's disease. I don't think I'm not familiar with it, and how you thought it was similar to fibromyalgia, and how you thought that LDN, what types of symptoms she's had and were getting better, or how, with talking with your conference, how you thought in that model it might be working.
Well, being brief could be difficult in that case. Let's see. You want me to explain how it could be similar to fibromyalgia. Okay, one of the main ways I've arrived at where I am is that I prospect PubMed, and I take all kinds of tangents, and then I look for things that look like they're similar. And that was how I found that there's other diseases that LDN is useful for. I think that her disease, that the collagen weakness that's involved in Ehlers-Danlos syndrome produces chronic joint pain and joint dislocation. Hypermobility indicates that the joint collagen may be a little bit weak. Many people have no pain with that, and then they never get diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. It's possible that Jim Carrey, who's very hypermobile, that his mother had Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. She was in horrible pain. He's not. Women tend to get way more pain with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome than men. It's probably at least 80% female that the disease occurs in. And from this joint pain develops generalized pain with generalized muscle tenderness and pain, sleep disturbance, gastrointestinal disturbances. Wound healing is poor in all forms of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And there's considerable research that indicates that the joint weakness, the joint hypermobility, is probably one of the major etiological pathways to what gets diagnosed as a wastebasket category, fibromyalgia. That as much as 30% of fibromyalgia patients, somewhere between 15 and 30%, may have gotten there through having some of the genetic deformity of Ehlers-Danlos, or all of it, and never getting diagnosed because the diagnosis is extremely difficult to get. Because, especially for the hypermobility type, there is no single gene. So you can't take a DNA swab and say, that person has Ehlers-Danlos hypermobility type. So it's really a galloping pain syndrome. And I think that it's fairly likely that that's the main thing that fibromyalgia is a galloping pain syndrome. Same as chronic fatigue syndrome, galloping pain syndrome. And Ehlers-Danlos is one good source of that pain. So that's why I think that the effectiveness on fibromyalgia will reflect on the effectiveness for Ehlers-Danlos. And because Ehlers-Danlos is a rare disease, you don't get any money to study it. The geneticists own the turf of studying it, and they want to wait for the genome project and all that. They don't want to bother with treatments now. But if it's allied to fibromyalgia, we then have millions of allies that are also suffering from the disease.
All right, Norman, I want to ask the other members of the panel, having heard now, each of you having heard the others, whether you had any further comments or any questions from the panel. Otherwise, are there other questions? Question? Go ahead.
You've all made the comment in one way or the other that we're looking at a myriad of disease states that all, you know, we're kind of shotgunning with this naltrexone. Has anybody given thought to the idea that maybe this myriad of disease states is actually one thing, and that there might be a single type of etiology that causes these diseases to happen in people, and it might have some genetic predisposition, but instead of calling it, you know, any one of 5 or 10 different types of MS and fibromyalgia and all these other diseases, perhaps we can focus on the fact that there is a commonality to these, and that they express themselves in different people in different ways. So instead of having a list of 50 disease states that naltrexone seems to work on, perhaps we ought to look at what is common to all these disease states and say naltrexone and other approaches has a mitigating effect on that, and therefore that's why we can look at these other situations. So what do you think?
Well, I'll comment on that. I think that you might be right. And to just make a wild-ass guess, you know, what if each of these diseases had a viral etiology and this, you know, boosts your immune system to work as an antiviral? You know, it could be something as simple as that.
Yeah, there's one comment to that. When we first started doing this back in 98 or 99, I used to talk to a lot of people, and two or three things always came up. Something happened. They could always tell me when their problem started. And it started after some major trauma or after some major disease or a virus of some kind. So mm-hmm. It might be viral. What I'm saying, something usually snaps, and people with these diseases can look backwards in time and say, that's when mine started, after I got over the mono or after I got cured from the disease.
Larry, can I make a comment? Those of you who are familiar with our website, ldninfo.org, will see that the theme of the underlying issue is portrayed there. It turns out that all of the major categories that are affected by LDN are all characterized by an immune system that has been degraded and is marked whenever it's been checked by low endorphins. And yes, expressed in different ways depending on the proclivity that you inherit. But HIV/AIDS has an immune system that's been destroyed. Certainly cancer, all the autoimmune diseases are grouped. In fact, we even cite research papers on animal models of autoimmune disease. And in both cases we cite, and that's why we picked them, the investigators were bright enough to work with the young animals before they develop the phenotype of the disease, before they manifested the symptoms of the autoimmune disease that they were going to mimic of humans, and they found in each case that the endorphins were low in those animals. So that theme hasn't been challenged. That's the umbrella. And when you take LDN, you raise your endorphins. So yes, I think it was Dr. Gironi's slide in which they found endorphin levels weren't low in depression compared to...
They're not?
In depression, patients measured higher endorphin levels compared to normal and higher than in chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia syndrome. And the vet study we perform to investigate whether endorphin can have a diagnostic tool to distinguish between depression and chronic fatigue syndrome. As you know, several symptoms in chronic fatigue syndrome overlaps with depression, and the results were different about endorphin.
Thank you. I take LDN as a prophylactic. I travel a lot in Africa, and Dr. Bihari told me that he takes it as a prophylactic.
Right.
And I take it at 4.5 milligrams. It seems to work fine. I have mm-hmm. wonderful dreams, actually, vivid and wonderful. it's not a disadvantage to me. Just anecdotally, I'd like to tell you that I've given it to two people, one with shingles, and their shingles, which is normally about a three-month progression, mm-hmm. went away in a week. And another was labyrinthitis. The whole family had it, including a small child. And
really?
Dr. Bihari gave me the dose for the small child, and it went in 2 days.
Wonderful. Right. Going back again to Larry's observation about the event followed by the disease, very often a story that members of the LDN Yahoo group report, and as maybe our patients panel will describe shortly, how, for instance... a woman who exercised for years and felt relatively well and then for some reason had to stop exercising, right in the wake of that, the first big manifestation of the disease.
I just have a very quick question regarding LDN and alcohol. Does it block the effects of alcohol in any way?
Not that we're aware of.
No.
I think we're at time.
Time. Okay. Thank you, panel.